Welcome back to another Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio. Our next guest, I am happy to have. We're having a rural health show tonight. We can talk about all rural health. And our next guest is no stranger to rural and rural healthcare, Beth O'Connor, the executive director of the Virginia Rural Health Association. So welcome to the show, Beth.
Thanks, Michelle.
It's so great to have you. We just talked with Alan Morgan, and the two of you work together. Obviously, Alan at the national level and Beth, you at the state of Virginia level. And tell our listeners a little bit about who your members are. Who do you serve in VRHA and what services do you provide?
Sure. So the Virginia Rural Health Association is a statewide nonprofit advocacy organization. And our members, you know, pretty much run the gamut of health and healthcare. So there are hospitals and clinics, there's medical schools and nursing schools and faculty and students at those schools. There's public health officials and public health departments. There's researchers, there's consultants. There's a whole mishmash of people. Basically, if you think health and healthcare and stick rural in front of it, that's who we are. And so with that, you know, we provide a variety of services to our members, information. You know, we've got our own podcast, plus our newsletter and all the social media, education. We've got our big annual conference coming up this November and just wrapped up our Rural Health Clinic Summit, and advocacy. I spend part of my time talking to our elected officials about how the decisions they make affect health and healthcare in rural Virginia.
So you mentioned the summit. You just finished it. I know Blue Cirrus, we just spoke at that summit. That just completed earlier this month. Tell our listeners about that and tell our listeners about the event that's coming up in the fall.
Sure. So our Rural Health Clinic Summit is the opportunity for our rural health clinics, you know, mostly the office administrators, but sometimes other folks as well, to come together and get training, education, regulation updates specific to rural health clinics. You know, a lot of people don't realize what a rural health clinic is. They think it's, you know, any clinic that happens to be in a rural area or maybe a federally qualified health center that's in a rural area. But a rural health clinic is actually its own designation under the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, and they have their own set of rules. And sometimes it's hard for those smaller clinics to know what's going on in Washington, D.C., and make sure that they're up to date on the various regulations that affect them.
Yeah, you're right. There are very specific rules around RHCs, and they sometimes differ wildly differently than other health institutions in the way that they can be open, for example, and whether they can provide care. I know I've certainly rubbed up against that when we've done some telehealth work, and we know that there isn't a clinician in the office, for example. If there's not a clinician in the building, then you're not allowed to keep those doors open. So
nobody can get past the waiting room if there's no clinician.
That's right. And I was surprised to hear that because we often talk about telehealth being a great opportunity in this age of infectious disease, whether that's COVID or RSV or any other type of communicable disease that we might see across the population, that the clinician might be sick. And this is using telehealth is a way to potentially bridge the care, but it is not allowed in the RHC environment, because if they're not inside the building, then being virtual is not enough.
Sure. And, you know, like many things, the regulations around telehealth were eased during the pandemic, but with the public health emergency being called off, those regulations are going back to what they used to be.
That's right. So we talked a little bit about, we've talked before about, you know, the changes in regulation around rural health and the geographic site restrictions being one of those areas that we currently have waivers around, as you noted, because of the public health emergency that have been extended through the end of, for the most part, through the end of 2024, which allow for the geographic site restriction to be waived, which for those that aren't aware, that sort of prevents essentially rural organizations from providing telehealth just because they're in a rural area, which is kind of silly. So everyone from a bipartisan perspective understands that that's a problem. And we now have the Connect for Health Act that's been reintroduced again to allow for that to be kind of expunged, and we have bipartisan support, which doesn't often happen in Washington, but we do have it in the case of telehealth. How important is that geographic site restriction removal for rural health as it relates to telehealth?
But, if you don't have those geographic requirements, or if you don't fit in those geographic requirements, you don't exist. I mean, it's just that simple of you either can or you cannot. And so if the regulations don't fit what the rural health clinics need to do, then that service doesn't do anybody any good.
Right, and they're not available to that area. We talked about the challenges around workforce. And you and I have talked about this over the years. Workforce challenges in Virginia, and I certainly talked about it with Alan in our last interview. What is Virginia doing to address some of the workforce challenges and potentially utilizing telehealth? I know that there's sometimes some challenges around that, obviously, with the regulation that we just spoke about, but the workforce challenges in rural areas, especially now that we see there's data and the research that shows, over 600 hospitals or organizations in rural areas are at risk closing because of financial constraints. I mentioned this in an article to Alan, and he said that number is actually closer to 635 based on their data. And actually, 11 institutions have already closed in rural areas, which makes a huge hole in those communities. So, talk about how the state of Virginia is addressing the workforce challenges, given, burnout and hospital closures and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and Virginia Rural Health Association is looking at this at a couple different angles. One, we work closely with the Virginia Work Health Development Authority, which is looking to address those workforce shortages. In Virginia, the area health education centers are under their umbrella. So doing what we can to make sure that we're identifying the gaps and encouraging our local students to go into healthcare careers. It's going to be much easier to get a kid from a rural area to go into medicine or nursing or whichever, and then come back to that rural area than it is for to attract an urban kid to go to a rural area and stay in that rural area long term. So definitely looking at that from a recruitment and retention lens. The other thing that Virginia Rural Health Association is doing is we have a workforce development grant through the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, where we are working in partnership with the local workforce development boards to give people who don't currently have jobs that pay them a living wage, encourage them to go to their local community colleges, get associate's degrees in nursing, in lab tech, in whatever else it is that they can do to meet their local needs. And so that's a great way to A, increase your health workforce, and B, address poverty in your local community.
Absolutely. And I mentioned that there's some, with Alan, that there's some workforce public-private partnerships that are very similar to what you're describing in South Carolina as well, to try and encourage people to not only live but work in the rural areas and provide the infrastructure, whether that's healthcare or schools or other businesses that are necessary to be able to support a rural area, which is absolutely doable. And the people that live in rural areas love to live in rural areas. That's part of their culture, part of their life, and part of what they know and how they want to live their lives. So you're right, pulling from the rural area versus trying to get an urban student or urban medical student to come to a rural area. That's fine with some of the incentives that are out there, but they only last for a certain period of time, and that's not the long-term solution that's needed for these rural areas. So let's talk a little bit about telehealth and how that can help bridge the gap around specialty care in particular, knowing that neurologists, cardiologists, rheumatologists, et cetera, endocrinologists can't necessarily provide an entire practice for themselves in those rural areas, and therefore may not actually be available What do you see in terms of the use of specialty care via telehealth in the state of Virginia?
Yeah, Virginia has long been on the cutting edge for telehealth. Some of our regulations are, some of the most supportive of telehealth in the United States. And I give full credit to the Virginia Telehealth Network and the Mid-Atlantic Telehealth Resource Center for that. And so with that, we've been able to use telehealth to help support OB-GYN care, to help support behavioral health, to help support a number of other specialties and other services. Stroke care has been huge in rural Virginia. To be able to provide those services, not as a fix, but as a, at the very least, there's something instead of nothing. I think sometimes people tend to look at telehealth as a magic wand that will, make rural problems go away. But the reality is it's a piece of the puzzle. It's a very important piece, and we can certainly do more with it, but it's just one thing, and we need to continue to make sure that that's available for our rural providers and our rural citizens.
I think that's a really good point. It's true in rural and in urban. Telehealth is one piece of the puzzle. It's not the, magic bullet to solve all problems, and it should be part of the clinical protocol, part of the clinical care plan. I preach this all the time. It's not just a convenience care scenario. It needs to be part of how you practice medicine. And therefore, as we hear sometimes, telehealth is health, and we shouldn't separate it as a separate healthcare modality, if you will. It's part of healthcare, and I think that's been hard for lots of organizations, rural and urban, to wrap their heads around that in COVID, that felt like a way to reduce transmission of infection, which is great. But that's more of a convenience space versus integrating that into your best practice, into your care plans and your protocols. So I'm glad you pointed that out. It's really one piece of it. It's not the end all be all, and it's not separate and apart from the rest of healthcare.
Absolutely. And with that, I think medical schools need to understand that, again, it's an integrated piece of the care structure. We've heard that medical schools don't want to incorporate, providing services via telehealth because, they don't have capacity to provide one more class. Well, it's not one more class. It's part of what you are already doing. Just like you don't have a separate class on how to use a stethoscope, it's integrated into how you provide the care. It's a big piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. We're going to be in furious agreement over that, Beth. That's important for these medical schools to understand, and for legislators to understand that funding needs to go towards these medical schools to help them be able to provide these opportunities for the clinicians, whether they be doctors, DO, MDs, DOs, NPs, PA, whatever their acronyms are, whatever their letters are after their names, whatever their degrees are. At this stage, that level of healthcare can come from anywhere, including nurse practitioners. And we know in the state of Virginia, that based on the work that certainly Blue Cirrus has done in that state, that there's challenges around the data that can be researched that can be collected in individual states, that it may show there's plenty of psychiatrists or there's plenty of cardiologists in the state to meet the needs of the people in the state. The problem is they're not located in the areas that you might necessarily need them. So everyone can't go to Richmond, everyone can't go to Roanoke, everyone can't go to just outside of DC, for example. And when you talk about your Appalachian population, they're not, the trust levels are not there to be able to go. They won't go to the cities to be able to provide care. They want to go to their local primary care provider. We talk about how important that is, that relationship between the rural in areas and rural communities and their primary care and pediatric care patients and clinicians. And how is it, and what you talked a little bit about, you mentioned, and I wanted to capitalize on it, is this infant mortality. I know in many of the rural areas, there is a high level of infant and maternal mortality during childbirth. And there is a place for telehealth there to assist organizations and other clinicians to be able to better care for complicated cases around pregnancy. And we know that those moms that are pregnant want that specialty care, and they also, the clinicians that are in the areas, want that support from specialists who may have seen some of these, more complicated cases more often. Any comments around that from your side?
Something I think most people don't realize is that not all hospitals provide labor and delivery services. Most of the rural hospitals in Virginia do not have labor and delivery services, which means they don't have OB-GYNs on staff, which means they're not providing prenatal care. In Virginia, the county just north of me, Giles County, the hospital there, if a woman showed up in labor, they would stuff her in an ambulance and send her 25 miles down the road to the Montgomery Hospital. They don't have the service because they don't have enough women in the childbearing age range to be able to justify that expense of having those people on staff. We know that babies aren't something that you schedule 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. They have issues at all hours of the day, every day of the week. And so it's not like you can have just one OB-GYN on staff. You've got to be able to do that service 24/7. And so with that, for areas that aren't able to provide that labor and delivery service and therefore don't have that kind of staff, telehealth to be able to talk to OB specialists is very important for those developmental stages in pregnancy to keep good tabs on mom and baby and making sure that they're getting the care that they need.
Yeah, this is exactly the reason why you would use telehealth to be able to extend those providers. And hopefully our legislators understand how important this is and continue to support this through legislation. On a lighter side, you are doing your annual conference in November in Blacksburg. Tell us a little bit about what you're planning there and who will be in attendance.
Sure. So our annual conference is something that we host every year, the Rural Health Voice Conference. And this is an opportunity for people who are concerned about rural health in Virginia to come together and talk about, what's going on in their communities and learn from each other and share ideas. One thing that we emphasize with our conferences, especially for our breakout sessions, is it's not a static situation where you have somebody in front of the group talking to people who are passively listening, going over a bunch of data points on a slide. We know what the problems are. What we want is people to get together and talk about the solutions. Who's tried what? What's working? What's not? How are you funding this? How are you making it work long term? What barriers are you running into? What partners have popped up that maybe you didn't expect? How can we learn from each other to address these problems? How can we partner together to address these problems?
I think this is so important. We talked about this with Alan as well, this idea of best practice, sharing best practices across, because there's no reason that every organization needs to reinvent the wheel. You know that things work in different areas, and you might as well share that. As we do in healthcare, that's part of what we do every single day, is share information and share those best practices. So, Beth, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today and on the radio show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And we have just wrapped up a long-term project with VRHA, so we're happy to have been working with you and help to advance some of the telehealth initiatives inside of the state of Virginia. So thank you for giving us that opportunity to do that as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in learning more about VRHA and talking to Beth and her wonderful staff, you can reach her at vrha.org, and you'll find the conference, the Rural Health Voice Conference that we mentioned, that will be conducted on November 15th and 16th in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is a beautiful area. So if you are interested in rural health, please feel free to check out that website and register for that event. Thanks again for your time and your expertise in sharing what VRHA does and helping us learn more about Virginia Rural Health Association and the work that you're doing there. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show about healthcare and telehealth in particular. And it was a pleasure to have you on the show, Beth. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will be right back with our last guest on Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio.